Okay, so I'll just leave it at that. So here's this article that I think someone sent me. What's interesting is published in the Honolulu Times. The Honolulu Examiner or something.
Boy, that's a timely newspaper herald, isn't it?
What, Honolulu?
Times.
Oh, yeah, Times, right. But the point is Honolulu. Now, Carolyn, there seem to be journalists, or the Honolulu paper, even though it says Honolulu, but it's called Examiner.com, and it says something about Seattle. I can't figure out what it is.
Well, good, that's all right.
Yeah, but the point is that these articles keep getting posted in Honolulu by people associated with the Project Camelot, the Bill Deagle world, Carolyn. They seem to have access to this newspaper and get their stories out, and they're related to the kind of stuff talked about on Project Camelot. So there's this guy, I think he's the author, Alfred Weber. Now, you recognize that name, Carolyn? Alfred Weber?
No.
Okay, he's Jim George's hero. He's the guy that Jim George worked with, you know, 5-7 years ago when he was in Toronto and was doing some UFO disclosure stuff and all that.
Huh.
Alfred was his main guy, and he was employed by him or doing something with him. Okay, you finished?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Alfred seems to be the author of this. So here's what it says. Second whistleblower emerges to confirm reality of time travel. It says a second whistleblower, this one a physicist, has emerged to confirm the existence of U.S. government development of time travel technology, and he emphasized the importance of the real-world application of such technology for achieving planetary sustainability. Dr. David Lewis Anderson, director of the Anderson Institute, emerged publicly in a two-hour interview on December 23, 2009, to give an extensive account of his time control research for the U.S. Air Force, which he later continued at his Time Travel Research Institute and other organizations. Dr. Lewis's, okay, this is David Lewis Anderson. Now they call him Dr. Lewis, but same guy, Lewis Anderson. Dr. Lewis's public revelations regarding time travel followed disclosures made in August and November by Andrew D. Baziego in interviews concerning his experiences in time travel experiments undertaken by DARPA, they're the ones who create the internet, by DARPA's Project Pegasus, or Pegasus, in the early 1970s.
Pegasus.
A September 15, 2009 report derived from the WebBot, predicted that a planetary whistleblower would emerge from the current period of U.S. financial collapse. Now, we've brought up this guy before. WebBot is CliffHighHalfHuman.com, who do the computer pattern recognition.
Yeah.
And Ion brought up the original version of that. I think Cliff High and them do a deviation of it, right? Or anyways, so Cliff High...
Abstract regarding it.
Yeah, now Cliff High, Carolyn, is the guy who wrote that put-down of Bill Deagle. Remember you read it and said he has to not agree. He says that Bill Deagle's talking bullshit. Remember that, Carolyn?
Yeah.
Okay, that's Cliff High. This article is talking about him. And these are fringe guys, so to speak. Cliff High, it says the Cliff High, the genius behind the web bot, where they analyze chat rooms and find patterns of what's coming, determined that the individual is very likely Mr. Baziego. So... a lawyer from Washington State who is leading a truth campaign to establish that the U.S. defense community achieved teleportation in the late 1960s. Now, let's just stop there, Ion.
All right, what you want to know? Diane, Wyoming.
Yes, teleportation was achieved in the 20s and 30s in Germany with the Jewish scientists in the Third Reich, and they carried that on to Area 54 and Pentagon and... probably it was well before the late 60s, correct?
No. Yes, it was a little before that. It wasn't mastered because they were afraid of it. They didn't have there was so much radiation involved, it was ambient, but at that point it was still causing issues because they were afraid of it. But they fine-tuned it. Your fellow at NASA, the German...
Wernher von Braun.
That's the one. Had to... work out some bugs.
Yeah, and he died in 69, so he worked out the bugs before then.
That's correct.
And then
that project is housed in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
That would be, they use technology. It's almost like Fringe. They had some technology that they had radiation and all that to do this, right?
Well, yeah, that was the problem with the Germans' teleportation process too. You got too hot. Your cells got too hot because you had issue with it.
Like David David Roberts in Fringe, the guy who got diseased. You know, David something Roberts. David Roberts Jones.
That was the example. It's not like that.
But that's a metaphor in the Fringe series of what actually was an issue 40 years ago, in 50 years ago. What?
Yeah, wasn't it?
Now, an issue. It's still an issue, or it's always the now, when you say
it's
now?
It's always the now.
Right. So what I get from that is
because
that...
Now, wait. Stop. This is good. Carolyn, this may be the example you're asking for. Okay, there's an article. There's someone has something to say. They have empirically referenced it to the point that they felt comfortable to write it down and attach a name to it, of what was, as though is, was from a different stance of knowing of what that was. You see, they've cleaned up now what happened then.
Yeah.
Because then is only now. Because until the now became empirically referenced, there was no then to prognosticate regarding.
Right, there was no late 60s experiment until now could somehow have the experience now.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then have to always refer to the previous thing, or so you wouldn't have can't know it.
And if that's, if that didn't happen until now, how would you find it to be your reference to validate it or straighten it out?
Right, and it always involves the future, too.
Well, that's not.
That's not. That is part of the now.
Tomorrow is the holiday that never comes.
All right, so I got this idea that what happened in the Third Reich is that the Nazis and the scientists around there started to see these things, but were intimidated or different aspects, and it took them another span of nows to work it out. So the Pentagon developed in the 50s and 60s what was it glimpsed in the 30s and 40s, correct? You agree with that, Ion?
No.
Are you saying that some of the people in the Third Reich went all the way?
Wait. We didn't say a thing, Bob. What we were going to ask you to do, just so we got exactly what your meaning was, if you could please ask the question again, and there's two little parts that we want to file off. They're a little bit sharp. But we think your statement was exactly close to correct, but proceed about the now then.
Yeah. In the Third Reich, based on things discovered by Tesla and the Russian and whatever else was discovered in the 1890s, into the turn of the century, and Einstein sees some of them in the patent office, people started to do pretty amazing things in the 20s and 30s and 40s, but they got intimidated, or they botched
sure. We'll tell you. Science of that day started recognizing radiation fields and radiation levels. And there's always ambient radiation. It's not a problem. But once you start having machines that click to tell you how many rads of radiation there are, that's when it became an issue and a negative ramification of the technology that they had sort of dumbed into.
Yeah, so they knew the non-physical experiences, parallel worlds. They picked up on that through the mediums, but then they tried to make technologies inspired by that contact, and the radiation was the big bugaboo for them.
Because they would never deal with it, because their mediums didn't have problem with it because it's not a problem.
Right. But the human knowledge, looking for a reason, had created a background that would be scared of radiation when it showed up because they were measuring everything.
Well, now you have magnetrons that run, or magnetos that run microwave ovens, and they have this little metal plate with holes in it. It calculate where the radiation's going to bounce and contains it with those holes in it that take care of it. So now you're not afraid. You don't know any more than about radiation now than you did then. But the only difference is now it's been contained, so you're not afraid of it. So now everybody seems to have a microwave in their house, whether they use it or not.
Right, and people, they believe, today, the people believe that it's been brought under control.
Correct.
And they accept that. Okay.
And therefore, then they don't come in and it causes you problems.
Right, okay, so I want to, so we've got the details on this sentence, the Defense Community Chief Teleportation in the late 60s, that is true, correct? That is true. That statement is true, correct?
Okay.
So that Cliff High predicted that someone would whistleblow on time travel and this kind of stuff, and then Cliff High and his web bot are saying, yes, it's Mr. Basiego. He's the one who showed up in August, November, and so that's who we predicted. All right. The report that predicted that a Basiego kind of guy would show up, the report also stated that Mr. Basiego's crusade would spark a movement as other whistleblowers shared with the public previously secret information. So they're saying that Basiego sparked Anderson and that fulfills Cliff High's prediction. So it says, in fulfillment of the scenario predicted by the web bot, both Mr. Basiego and Dr. Anderson are whistleblowers who have emerged during the latter months of 2009 to affirm secret time travel advancements by the U.S. government and private industry that may articulate a way out of the current depression by investment in a 21st century infrastructure that would include teleportation and other new energy applications. Now, Ion, is it true that Mr. Basiego and Mr. Anderson, you can take them one at a time, know of what they speak?
Yeah.
They did engage in research on time travel.
No.
They didn't.
Not on time travel, Bob.
Okay, on what did they emphasize?
They were trying to work out the space continuum. It's never been about time. It's always been about the practical examples of experience.
And teleportation.
It's not about time. It's not about time.
It's about teleportation.
Well, yes, you're not teleporting to a different time.
Right.
You're teleporting to a different reality.
Okay, so Basiego did research in teleportation. They call it time travel experiments, but we'll call it teleportation. Did he achieve it or find out stuff?
It was achieved before he got a hold of it.
So he found out they did it, and then he did his own tinkering on the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good, and put his John Hancock on the residue.
Does he know that he knows that others did it before him?
Of course.
Right, so he just was obsessive compulsively going over it again. And then
that might have to be so spooky spiritual about how it was, everything was regarded.
That's what he was concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now David Lewis Anderson did the same thing. He got obsessive-compulsive of going over what had already been established and investigated himself, tinkered with it?
Yes.
Okay, so now, are they in touch with the 418 group, Anderson and Basiego?
We would say yes.
All right, so they are doing their...
But it wasn't an inside call-up, how y'all doing. It was much more an invited process.
Yeah, they were... Yeah, he didn't call them up. They invited him in.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, and this relates to, I think we were talking about Dan Winter was interested in a scientist, and then Ion mentioned a Stefan or Stephen somebody, Stephen Cern or something, and that probably was one of the guys in this level. And that's why Ion mentioned him. You know who I mean?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, so, okay, so here is, these people are making... Okay, did Cliff High do good work by predicting this would come out, or he actually knew for other reasons and uses the cover story of the web bot predicting it? Did he actually make a real prediction and it was fulfilled?
Yeah.
But he's talking about in time, he's using it the wrong terms, they're calling it time travel.
Good, that's right, that was our issue.
Yeah.
So that if you take that part out of it, then the answer is yes, very good. What is going on? There is a, we need to hold on just a second if it's okay. We want to know who this is coming from, IDW for just a second, because he keeps seeing this middle-aged lady with fiery red hair, not like a size 2, you know, swimmer's build model, but more on the more fleshy side of a grandmothery look, with a dark dress on that goes to the ground, and with a medium white apron, and her head's down, and her eyes are not closed, but they're just sort of dim. You know what we say when their eyes are not sharp anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And this person is standing and standing and standing. It's like Bob hadn't got to the part yet, so they're waiting their turn. Do you all have any recompense of what we're discussing?
Not immediately. What about you, Carolyn?
No, it doesn't ring any bells.
Who the person is?
What was that woman in Toronto that worked with anxiety? The only thin person. I don't know any thin older people.
But she's not thin. She's
not thin. Healthy.
You said size 2.
I said not size 2.
Oh, okay.
She's a bit plump, but not total. Not plump.
Almost like an Aunt Jemima looking person.
Mm-hmm.
But some of that, the way the dress is, you know, it makes them look.
I mean, could it be Mae Brussel? Could it be?
A black long dress.
With a white apron.
And red hair. She's red hair.
No, we
don't know any, unless that's Kelly. Kelly has red hair.
Well, but she's not 50 or...
Well, what I'm thinking of, I spoke to James last night, the guy in Australia. We had a two-hour discussion. He's about 30, and he seems pretty tuned in, and he was beaming stuff at us during a recent melting titanium. But I was wondering if it had something to do with him, because he seems to be trying to tune into us. It probably doesn't, but that's just what I'm thinking about James. And as a matter of fact, I was going to ask Ayan, what did they think of my conversation with, how was it with James? He's a total Ayan changed his life, he said. So he's
fishing.
He's fishing. He's looking for a role for himself. We know that. Any good stuff you could say about the conversation?
Sure. What did Connie say?
Back to the woman. We don't know her.
Can we ask her who she is? Why don't we ask her who she is?
Walter's wife.
Margot?
Margot. She's the only redhead.
Right.
Margot Jordan Parker. Ayan.
Medium build.
Uh-huh.
But a little heavy, not like large or anything, or not disproportionate.
Yeah, she's big, but not too...
Not like obese or anything, but just full-figured.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she became obese. Why can't we just ask her, Ayan?
Well, because this is coming from JW, and you can, and we can do this, but the point is there's not a significance of interrupting the whole flow of all this conversation, unless it's just critical that this keeps showing up.
Hmm.
Well, let's see if it shows up. We'll carry on.
Is she in his room or something?
I'm standing right there. And it's not like an apparition. It's more like a postcard, and you look at the postcard and you go, oh, isn't that nice? Look, there's the beaches of Maui, and you think about Maui.
Well, I think if she's standing there, we should go to JW and have him.
It's more like a postcard, Carolyn. That's what we're telling you.
Oh, she's not there to talk to.
Well, possibly, maybe, but that's really not so much the point. It's as though it keeps flashing, and there's something going on that we were hoping would resonate with you. And if it doesn't resonate with you or Bob, then Bob's right. We'll just sort of watch it and see what happens. But just know that this is a face. It's a very attractive face, full face. But
is it Rachel? Is it Rachel from the Third Reich, or is it someone more modern?
Well, we would say, we would answer that question. Now, we're going to help JW just a little bit in the describing. We would say, yes, it would be a more modern look, but maybe in a more, like a fancy dress where you would wear that Aunt Jemima dress, you know, a Laura the Scarlet O'Hara dress that's, that Butterfly McQueen would wear, that type of a setup.
Well, what decade is that style?
Well, Butterfly McQueen would have been Scarlet O'Hara, Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, 1870s, 1860s, long
right,
time ago.
Big, long, full skirt.
Are you
skirt.
Saying that's what she's wearing?
Yes, but she's much more modern.
Well, that would get up to 1930s then.
Well, or even now, I mean, because it's, you know, full makeup, real makeup. But the face and then the rest of the dress seems to come from a different era. And it's just clear, and we kind of shuffle with it a little, and it's right there, and it's right there. It's been there for a bit. And the reason we brought it up was because, is there something, that's why we asked the question, and you had it right, Bob. If it's not hitting right now, it will. You see, it will orchestrate itself out. And this would just be give you a little heads up that it's coming. No malice, no problem, no pistols, no, you know, not a problem. It's just a face that keeps showing up, a face that keeps showing up. And that's all. And JW just had to get that out because he wasn't going to have it anymore because it was aggravating to him as though we were supposed to engage this person and there's really no topical reason for the engagement.
And you don't know who it is.
He won't make that clear.
Oh, it's up to him to make it clear.
Well, he can at least describe it, and we've given you those words, but see, that dynamic, we don't have a dog in the fight. We don't even know. But it's something from his physical that keeps forcing it.
Okay, so we'll just put that in abeyance. Let's go back to the article.
Good. Very good. And it makes it will clean itself up, but that would just have to get out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the article continues. The report also stated that Mr. Bassiego's crusade would spark a movement as other whistleblowers shared with the public previously seeking information. In fulfillment of the scenario predicted by the Webbot and Cliff High, both Mr. Bassiego and Dr. Anderson are whistleblowers who have emerged during the latter months of 2009 to affirm secret time travel advancements by the U.S. government and private industry that may articulate a way out of the current depression via investment in 21st century infrastructure that would include teleportation and other new energy applications. Then it says the Webbot project uses software, now they're going to talk about Cliff High, to search the internet for about 300,000 keywords with emotional context and record the preceding and following words to create a snapshot. Through this, the technology Webbot is claimed to be able to examine the collective unconscious of the world as a whole. Is that accurate there, that statement, Ion, that what they're doing is...
Through non-physical, it would be, but without non-physical, no.
Yeah, and they don't include non-physical, so they're doing it, but
yes.
Their premises they are supposedly illustrating are false.
Very good.
Yeah. The data collected by the Webbot is then analyzed via asymmetric language trend analysis, or ALTA, to discern future trends. Now... In the unusual terminology employed by ALTA, Cliff High, a September 15, 2009 report using data collected by the Webbot stated, quote, it is very likely that the whistleblower who had been described in previous ALTA reports as emerging out of the period of the coagulation of the government officialdom of the U.S. of A. due to financial structure collapse is a person by the name of Ant, and they put in this name, but I don't know if it is the name they said. In the ALTA report published in September, Cliff High, the administrator of the Webbot, predicted that the truth campaign of American lawyer Andrew D. Bassiego will raise Mr. Bassiego's public profile to a very high level within the mainstream media and that such presence in the media will climb over the next 9 months to a planetary level. Is that accurate, Ion? That is, Bassiego's going to become high profile?
No, they missed it just a little bit. Alan Stone
is going to do something.
It will be what that's based on.
Well, what do you mean? Alan Stone leaked information to Cliff High. That's one way to interpret what you just said.
Yes.
And Cliff High didn't find this out from his WebBot pattern recognizer. He was just given this name and made the prediction, correct?
And made the WebBot line up with what he was trying to vindicate or validate from the storyline.
Is Alan Stone part of the 418 group?
No,
but he is someone in the know of the Pentagon activities over the last 40 years?
Well, I would have to say yes.
Yeah, and he's the whistleblower, but he's using Cliff High and Bisseglio as the frontmen for him.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
All right. Cliff High also stated that this person would make a planetary impact of such magnitude that a second wave of other whistleblowers of all kinds would be drawn into public view. Now, do you see that happening, Ion?
Sure.
But that would just become a cottage industry where everybody claims, just like UFO abductees, I saw this too. Right? That's what'll happen.
I got my rectum probed with the great big thing.
By the time travel technology.
Very good.
And so this is an article promoting WebBot, Carolyn, and all that. And this is what's funny. I think this is a mainstream media. They seem to promote the Project Camelot gang. So then it says, since the September report, those following the WebBot project, by reading the Elsa reports, have speculated as to who the next whistleblower to follow Mr. Bisseglio might be. One candidate is Dr. Anderson. According to the physicist, he was employed at a young age by the U.S. Air Force to conduct advanced research and development at the Air Force Flight Test Center at Edwards Air Force Base in the Mojave Desert. Is that true that he was that as a young person, Ion? This is Anderson.
He codes off just a little bit, but it's very close.
Okay, so then during that time, he laid the foundations for what would be known as time warp field theory. That means he found out a little bit about what the Pentagon had already done.
Yes.
An approach that models and describes how to use the natural forces of inertial frame dragging to create contained and controllable fields of closed time-like curves. Now, this is something like a Walter. It's almost like he's a Walter of Fringe, who recovered this stuff, and now he's admitting it and talking about it. But it's an emphasis on technology. Now, we can do this through parallel world traveling without technology. Ion? Right, Ion?
Yes.
Is the use of technology a creation by default method? Is it a complication? Is it just human creators wanting to make it more bulky? You know what I mean? Why do
we would say all three in varying degrees.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so...
Very good.
At his time travel research center in Long Island, Dr. Anderson further developed time warp field theory as well as a third generation time warp generator. Now, Bob and Carolyn and Ion at the Ionic Institute are doing this, right? We could say the same thing.
Sure.
To the degree these guys are doing anything. Dr. Anderson sets out 10 types of time control technology and methods, along with a feasibility analysis of each method. So if these guys develop time travel and allows people to use it, that would be a creation by default technology.
Good. Very good.
Yeah. So we're going to be offering an alternative to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, along with a feasibility analysis of each method. Among these time control technologies are quantum tunneling, time warp fields, and wormholes. Readers can listen to Dr. Anderson's two-hour interview with Sandra Sabatini here. And it goes on about all this stuff and time control research. All that is a replay. It is 2009 going back to 1968.
Mm-hmm, very good.
Right, you following this, Carol?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I just thought that this was appropriate. This article showed up right now, right when we're doing this, James asked me, these Norwegians who went into the parallel worlds, the 28, were they something special? I said, well, I think Ion said that you pretty well have to be an ascended master or reasonably ascended to do parallel world traveling. Now, I would now qualify that, Ion, with this. Everybody does it, but to remember it, you have to be moving towards the ascendant levels. Is that correct?
That's close, very close.
Yeah, because the Queen Mother wasn't an ascended person when she started doing it. So you can't really have to say. You can stumble into it like the Queen Mother, but the people in Norway who did that effect and made the spiral in the sky we talked about on cash flow, they were pretty skillful at it, pretty conscious, and we could say they're tending towards being ascended. Is that what Ian meant when said they were ascended? They're they're pros, so to speak. They're professionals.
Well, they're learning, but
yeah, and they're not. They may have stumbled it when they first discovered it, but they've practiced and they're pretty good. And so we don't want to imply that you I sort of left the impression you have to be ascended to do this, and that's not really a good assumption, is it?
Correct.
Yeah, so I'll mutate that for them.
But many have points of focused clarity, Bob, so that's no different than the regular human creator.
What is no different?
You have these sparks of what you call genius that just show up that are orchestrated and outlined already by you, but you just pop into these places and go, oh yeah, that was supposed to be. Well, look at there, my toothbrush is right there on the counter where I left it. Imagine that, you see. Well, that's synchronizing as well, but finding your toothbrush isn't quite the same big deal as altering the world.
Right, but are you responding to me saying I don't want to leave the impression with James that you have to be ascended to parallel world?
Good.
Yeah, you do have to overcome your fears.
Or not, but if you don't, then it's not going to change.
You'll end up like the Yale girl who got trapped in the wall because she started entertaining these ideas, got into it, and then didn't know how to get back. Right?
Good, yeah.
Right, so there's a bit of caution there. So, Carolyn, another thing about the 1960 is we go back to 1960 to alter it. So there were two points I was making. The 1960 is like now, if you remove the veneer of decency and decorum in 1960, where they wouldn't acknowledge what was going on underneath, because everybody was scared shitless. And what were they scared of? Well, communists. But the fact they were afraid creates problems for them, and they didn't have their kids abducted then, but they still had the fear 50 years later, and so their kids are abducted.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
the kids
that grew up then had the fear instilled at birth, so now they're expressing it in a big way.
Oh, that's okay, so that the fear that the kids back in 1960, the baby boomers lived in a quite fearless apparent environment, but they were inside an unrecognized fear milieu that then surfaced in them as they got older.
Well,
is that what you're saying, Ion? Agreeing with Carol?
You heard the air raid warning signs. You ducked under your chair to practice, avoiding the bomb. Yeah.
Duck and cover. But Ion, you're saying Carolyn's right, that they carried this fear and then it surfaced with their children, raising their children. So medieval people didn't have that kind of fear as they grew up.
Well, they feared the overlords and the sheriff who cut them down and sliced their head off.
And the edge of the world. They fall off the edge of the world.
Right, right.
Okay, so they had those kind of fears, but generally it was better. To grow up with air raid sirens is quite extreme compared to medieval periods, right, Ion? Or is it still the same fear?
Still the same.
But they didn't have a sense of time, and sort of celebrates the medieval people for not having that.
Right.
Yeah.
But they still had the fear.
Yeah, you have bands of bandits coming after you with sharp sticks.
Yeah, the four horsemen.
Yes, and you have the Sheriff of Nottingham going to take away your booty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you have Pontius Pilate. So the four horsemen, it's a gift. People, here's the thing. People come to this world, manifest, born in the physical, to have something to be afraid of because they want to have contrast. So that's a given. The Bible statement that there are four horsemen, and it applies to every day, is a law equal to the equals MC squared. And the equals MC squared is turning out to be not true. So the Bible states the laws of this dimension more than science has.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you want to overcome or relax and allow both the fear, then you allow the non-physical in, and you're not worried about the four horsemen. It won't drop on you.
Well, you embrace them, and then you become the equestrian that can tell them which way to go.
Right.
If there's black, white, and pale, what's the fourth one?
Red.
I mean, I think red is blood, so it's probably war. The pale one might be pestilences. The black one might be famine. And what did I leave out? White, black, red, and pale.
Fire.
One of them is
the fire coming from heaven.
Right, so one of them is fire. I think, Carolyn.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know which color. Can we say which horse is which iron? Or is it changed through history?
Yeah. Well, it waxes and wanes a bit, but here you go. You have the white horse.
Yeah.
Which sets up 7 years of fullness and then 7 years of famine.
Okay.
Then you have the black horse, which is the death. Black horse, which is death.
Death. And what was the white horse? Famine?
Famine.
Yeah, famine and death.
Yes, and then you have the red horse, which is your the fire falling from heaven.
Okay.
Asteroids destroying your planet.
All right, and then
okay,
we're
then
left
you have
with the pale horse.
Pale horse is your plagues.
And famine, or is famine part of the other
no,
one?
No, famine is famine. You starve to death. Plagues, you get boils and croak.
Right. So the death one, which was black, I think that is famine. That includes famine.
No, that's war.
Okay. Black is war. White is death.
Famine.
No, that's pale. No, pale is pestilence. Pale, pestilence. That's how we'll say that.
Okay.
And black is death?
War.
Oh, war.
Death and war. Same thing.
Not famines. We haven't brought famine in yet. So famine is what? We're left with white and red. Which one is...
Famine is the white horse.
White, okay. So red is fire.
The fire falling from heaven.
Okay. So that matches red. Black is war, white is famine, and
hungry,
and pestilence is pale. Okay, so just looking,
it's irrelevant.
Okay,
the point is, it's now that you've got it all figured out, these are what the conclusions that the average typical human would draw.
Okay, got it, yeah.
Read it, it's fun, read it.
Yeah, it's more of a joking thing. I got it, okay.
Well, it is, but think about it. It's not, the only reason it's funny is because it's the case.
Yeah, it's the people having contrast, creating contrast after they get it all. After they understand everything, they still get contrast. So understanding the role of contrast in this world is pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how to not resist it, relax, allow, and then not be controlled by it.
Yes, and now some say that's called overcoming.
Yeah.
But
that's the action
like
mode. The action
yes,
mode.
Yes, good. Very, very, very good. And that no attention required, that's the favorite kind of male, remember?
Right, so a lot of souls come in here to enjoy the contrast. Then they get all these cultural...
Well, to create.
To just create.
To enjoy the contrast is to figure out that there is no contrast, but there is contrast, but there doesn't have to be contrast. You can have all kinds of problems and then the solution show up at the same time, and it really doesn't make any difference. Okay? It's all worked out.
But they want to create within that. They want to create within that.
Yeah, because then they get the credit for it.
Right. Okay, so, and usually creation is responding.
If you didn't have a chart, you wouldn't have to spend all day every day figuring out how close or far away you were from your chartedness.
Right. So the.
Right.
No, that's right. No, it's Bob's burden, Bob's cross to bear. Though he doesn't care really. I fake civilian participation by creating a chart. You know, it's like contribution. It's like Eris when she threw the apple in among the party of the gods, and they all went nuts. Remember that? The story of Eris? E-R-I-S? Eris?
Yes.
Threw the apple in among the party of the gods, and they all fought over the apple because the apple said, whoever gets this is the best or something. Right?
Mm-hmm. An apple was a piece of fruit.
So the... So we come in to create, and we often, to create, have to have something to bounce off of, and that's our perception of the contrast that we want to create within. So now, I was telling Carolyn that my insight today was the chicken and egg problem. Like sometimes I'll say, well, Ion, it comes down to the chicken and egg, and Ion has used the phrase occasionally. The chicken and the egg is, I'm creating it, but there's an other world out there that's doing something to me, and we can't tell, did I create it or did they create it? So I said to Carol today that what Ion offers is that the chicken and egg dialectic, the chicken and the egg dialectic, is inframed too much within the physical and is forgetting the causative factor of the non-physical. So it's not just chicken and egg when you're trying to name, pin down what's causing what. You have to include the non-physical, which moves it to a three level. Three.
Yes.
You know?
And then, well, when you get to the three level, you stop asking the question of which came first.
That's right. When you include the non-physical, then, and you know non-physical is bigger than physical, makes up more of us than the non, than the physical.
Then you know that it becomes a creation, period. And then how it, which one was first, they were both created. And so they could actually be created simultaneously.
Right. And so the term chicken and egg, we have to expand. It's not a chicken and egg situation. It's a chicken and egg and non-physical situation, if we want to try to pin it down.
Well, it's a non-physical situation which allows the chicken and the egg.
Yes, and so...
Good.
So then Ion says that it's the chicken and the egg is like... I say the chicken and egg is like including only the labyrinth of your mind and the physical in your dynamic of what you're trying to use to find a reason.
To gauge your degree of separation, mostly, but not always, but lots of times for that purpose.
To validate and vilify. And then you bring in the non-physical, and that broadens the chicken and egg dialectic most humans are working with. So, like, I thought that's what LaRouche was saying, that if you work within our sense evidence and don't include what our senses can't see, you'll get into a positivistic Francis Bacon regular scientific
sense and sensibility reality.
Yeah, that arguing for your limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you include the non-physical, so you got three. Then I said to Carol, a new factor, if you wanted to include it and you had not totally absorbed in the non-physical and didn't care what was causing what, but if you wanted to include another level of causality, is that the present chip landscape, which came out of the TV landscape, which came out of the media history, and that leads to Ion saying, yes, the non-physical is being affected by the chip landscape. So we have a fourth causality factor. So it's not a chicken and egg, it's not limited to that. It's a chicken and egg, non-physical, and chip landscape, quadraphenic, four-way ratios of determining.
And are you able to tweak, not is the chicken or the egg, but does the chicken or the egg tweak?
Right, and does the non-physical and does the non-physical chi tweet? Right, the tweet would be the chip landscape. Right.
Correct. Yeah. You know, isn't that tweet?
Yeah, isn't that tweet? Sweet or tweet? They say. Yeah,
and
tweet.
And we're at the two-hour mark.
Yeah. So I would just say that I came to an insight that my chart operates on these four levels. I can see it in my chart. So Ion again is reflecting Bob knowledge back to Bob. Took 9 months to get it all, but.
He's doing great, though. He's a marvelous creator.
Yes.
We love talking about Wabi in the third person.
Yes. Carolyn, we're winding down. The 1960 is about all the fears, but there was that other dimension we can go back, like the Egyptians are doing with the future people are doing with the pharaohs. We can go back and play with 1960.
And put a boat beside the pyramid that's been there all along.
Right. The pyramid has been there all along.
No, the boat.
The boat.
Nobody said the boat that's been put. I mean, the boat was already there anyways.
Well, according to history, same way with the way you can screw with 1960 to make it be the way you want it to be and change all reality up to your now. Oh, that's what we're talking about. Now. Good. You got it.
Right. And so I wanted to say this an hour ago. So the guys from the future people who are future terrestrials who are playing with Egypt, Carolyn, they're beyond time, so they play with time. Time is an art
form. No, they don't play with time. They don't regard it. It's not it's time. It's not even timeless. It's only now.
That's right. So
that's the twist, and it's a little twist, and it's not hard. It's not hard if you can get rid of time.
That's right.
But if you add time into it, you're screwed because now you got to undo time. Well, that's hard because you've spent you spent an eternity trying to validate time, which isn't good.
Right, and so from the perspective of those that live within the illusion of time, they think the future guys are playing with time, but they're not. They're not even involved with time.
Right, very good. But it's a way to grasp it. If it's a way to grasp it, then good.
Right. So it in the.
Stitches don't hold up hemlines. Hemlines are. Stitches are what you use to validate that your hem is even all the way around.
Yeah, and you said, I forget the line, but you just said a line before that saying you play with it or that's the way it is if you work within the assumption of time.
Good.
Yeah, so the final point is... the traditional spiritual exercise of getting rid of your ego, which what Buddhism does and maybe the esoteric traditions of the Catholic monks.
Do they?
Well, they attempt.
They spend a lot of time trying to tell you to get rid of your ego. If you could just not be bothered by your ego, it wouldn't be a problem.
Right. So the new mysticism that Ion's recommending is you don't have to get rid of your ego or anything, but you do have to work on the concept of time.
You don't.
No, you don't even have to work on it, right. Well, you have to somehow...
No. If you have to work on the concept of time, then you got to validate that there's time to work through.
Right. So it's a real Zen...
If there were no cancer, you wouldn't have to overcome it.
Right. So, Karen, we're proposing to people to understand there's no time, and that's more difficult than getting rid of your ego. As most people perceive, that's more difficult than getting rid of your ego.
Right.
Yes, but they don't understand it. They can't figure it out. They can't gauge it. They can't get on it because they can't get on time. Or they feel real good because they synced up with somebody else at a certain element of now, and then they figure that they have good timing. And then they use time to validate timing, and that's just so backward. And then it makes it hard, and then it takes you 9 months, because there's time, to figure out the simplest concept ever to move to the next step. And that's okay. It's not a problem. It's just that it would be so much simpler without it.
Yeah, so we will harp on there's no time and find out ways of explaining to people there's no time and even cite the Hadron Colliders when they find out there's no time to show people there's no time, and they can't use that as an alibi if they want
to. Or just turn it loose to science and let them prove that there's no time, and then we're good.
Right.
Then the world will no longer be flat. Isn't that great?
Yeah, because when I talk to some people, they say, no, Bob, I need time. I have to spend time to get money to get time. And
good, yes, and that's quite an anomaly, and it's certainly all right, but it, you can also cry and hope for so much more.
Okay, there we have it, Karen.
Good.
Well done.
All right, we are complete, Ion.
Thank you.
We are indeed.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, we did it in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Wow, well, now we can start, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just getting ready.
I'll go to bed, Bob, and Bob will call you back.
Right. Bob's just counting on you to trickle off to bed now.
Yeah.
And then I got to make some calls. I've got to call so and so. And then you tiptoe back in there and close the door and shut down. Ring, ring, ring. Okay, Ion, let's go. And that's perfectly all right.
Okay, now, yeah, it was just over 2 hours, so I'm perfect. So that means JW can go to bed, and Bob doesn't have to go to the beach early tomorrow. Well, he shows up and keeps it before 2 o'clock in the morning for Ion, for JW.
The days change because sometimes it's like fresh on and can go all night, and sometimes it doesn't have anything to do with me. It has everything to do with the topic at hand, apparently.
Did you say me meaning you, JW?
Yeah.
Yeah, the topic at hand is what determines how urgent it's got to get out.
Kind of. There's this lady that keeps showing up, and I don't know what's going on or what this Aunt Jemima thing is, but it's pretty still here.
Yeah, did you know that Ion stopped our session and pointed this out about you? that you were seeing this lady. Did you know we were discussing it?
Yeah, I've seen it before, but it's almost like on the Aunt Jemima bottle.
Yeah.
You know, where they got the picture of Aunt Jemima in the long black dress with the white apron on the front. You know, not a full apron, but just, you know.
Isn't that
apron.
Julia Child?
No. She's heavier.
All right, but the point is, did you know that during the session we discussed your problem with the lady or the showing it up, and you were wondering about it? Did you know we discussed it with Ion?
No, I was just saying that was the picture. I didn't know. I knew it would seem to be good. It was just weird.
Yeah, we know about the lady. You just told us now, but we knew about it.
Half an hour ago,
we found out about it from Ion. And yeah. Ion was trying to get us to figure out who it was, and we couldn't come up with anything.
Oh, okay. Well, then don't worry, it will.
Right. I was asking Ion why. Well, tell us who it is. And Ion says, no, JW won't release the information. He couldn't get it from me.
I don't know. I just keep seeing it. And it's almost like a snapshot, you know, like in an old...
It's like a poster. It's like one of those pictures of George Bush you stand beside to get a picture. Oh, I'm standing with George Bush. One of those human-sized posters, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's what you mean by postcard. It's a picture, poster child for something. Could it be Liberace's mother? I'm just trying to think of parallel worlding or someone who is involved with that. Was it Eva Braun? You know what I mean? Just... trying to think of people connected to the fringe topics we're dealing with.
Yeah, I don't know. And you see, I'd say it would be like somebody's black nanny, but they had red hair.
Right. But they're not black.
They're not black, but it's just that, you know, it's just the only thing that I knew to parallel the description.
See, it could have been someone that we engaged, Carol and I engaged, through the years at some point. Could be Ruth Ferris from the Cosmic Awareness Group. It could be Bertie Ketching, so I don't know if she had red hair. Just think of different psychic people we were involved with, you know what I mean? Maybe.
And don't even know, and see, typically when I get it like that, then it comes back around full circle pretty quickly. But this is just, maybe it's coming, I don't know. But it's just odd that it would just kind of stop everything, but it's very... I don't know. Today's our first day. Give it a little attention. It'll get straightened out.
Did you know that I sort of started to rift in front of the chapel today?
Yeah, well, we got that this afternoon.
Yeah, how did it come to you? What did you experience?
I was chilling and gotten all my stuff done that I was going to do. I was just kind of relaxing, and I sat down and picked up a book, and then I thought, nah, no thanks, I'm good. Just sort of snuggled up in the covers on the sofa and just sort of cleared my mind a little bit, and then had this like dizzy, quaky weirdness.
Yeah.
Foggy, didn't know if I was going to make it or not, or stay or not stay, or what. And then the only reason I knew it was you was because of the Grand Wilaya clock tower.
You could see that?
Yeah, and the timing, and they counted off the minutes that passed while I was having it.
And for you, it went on for a few minutes.
4 minutes.
Right, and you knew Bob was having some kind of experience because it was near the clock.
And it was just so happened to be there.
There being near the clock.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, because the clock triggered off to you that Bob was walking along and be around the clock around that time, so it must be Bob having it.
Mm-hmm.
Could you?
I think I called and left a message a little after then.
Right, now, you thought it was me. Couldn't you think, well, it's JW having the experience and he's transported to the car.
No. When I have it, I don't ever get that. I go.
Right. So you knew you were picking up on someone else's experience.
Well, and with about a nickel's worth of deduction, it was you, because that's who I was thinking about after I saw the clock tower. Because when you get that kind of a feeling, you stop, like when you're on fire, stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah.
You go, wait, why am I having this? What is this?
Yeah.
How is this the fastest path to my joy? And then you answer the question, and then it comes to you, and you don't fight it or push against it or change. You know, you don't go. You don't go tie a big rope to the chandelier and hang yourself. You just embrace it and go, well, isn't that interesting? What's that about? How does that work? That seems fun. I don't know. Let's see how this unfolds. Let's file this away, because we'll get the opportunity to discuss it again, and we're sure it will be meaningful.
But you said
and
you...
it always did.
Yeah, you said you ask a question, the answer come, and then you find out it's Bob, or something like that. It's like the answer, source energy found the answer, and then... So you realize it was me in that sequence you were just describing.
Sure,
because
you could feel the place, and then you can, when you feel the place, then you don't, it's not a big deal, you just feel the place.
Yeah, okay.
If it had been me personally, then I just went on and went with it and went, hey, this is fun, that's cool, where are we going?
Right, so,
let's go to Buckingham Palace tonight, you want to?
Okay.
And me too, if I can join you.
No,
you're welcome to, Bob. We couldn't stop you if you wanted to, so.
Right, so we're going to Buckingham Palace. Oh, and so my having that thing in the apocalypse is defined as thinning of the veil, Carol. What was it?
Apocalypse means thinning of the veil.
Yeah, that happened to me a little bit today, right, Ion? Or JW?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm ready to enjoy the Buckingham Palace.
Good. So now everybody's talking about, and even Ion is pushed against apocalypse, and now all of a sudden it's like, yes, there is, you just didn't know what the word meant.
Yeah, you said a lot of people are talking about apocalypse, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's all you hear, 2012,
yeah.
Blah, 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 and that, all that is, if you call it the apocalypse, it's just the thinning of the veil.
Yeah, and I understood apocalypse meant revelation or, you know, secrets disappear.
Well, that the end of the world.
Right, so thinning of the veil can also mean what some people say apocalypse means, no more secrets.
Correct.
But it has to be more, not an abstract knowledge secrets, it's the experience of non-physical and no more time. So that's really...
Absolutely, that is exactly correct. And then you don't have to worry about keeping up with time, because there isn't any.
Right, so Carol, apocalypse doesn't mean, I'm not going to say people means no more secrets, it means the end of time.
That's what it does.
That's what it means.
That's what the Bible says. It's when time will be no more.
And people thought it meant the end of the world.
They thought it was the four horsemen, but no, that's always here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's good, sports fans.
Right. So if there is no time, there still is the experience of contrast and the four horsemen.
And that's up to the individual human creator.
Right. And the more they understand there's no time, the less they'll have to
engage.
The
more they shake their power, and the more they know how to control the waxing and waning that is their experience.
Yeah, and the waxing and waning of the four horsemen. And be able
and so then their contrast can be limited and minor.
Yes.
Or it can be huge and vast, and they can decide not to live anymore.
Yeah, it becomes the four mice rather than the four horsemen.
There
you go. No, the four ants that show up on our stove, Carolyn.
Indeed. Very good. Well, all right then. It's fun, and we'll play again.
Okay. Thanks a lot, JW.
Okay, great. Have a good sleep.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.